Welcome back to another edition of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast and the Prospect Deep Dive Series, where we're going through all 30 organizations, breaking down their top 30s. Today, we're diving into the San Diego Padres, only the most loaded organization, as my colleague Peter Flaherty will tell you. Pete, what's going on, man? Glad to have you on with me for the last time.
I know, this is a fun change of pace. I'm always on the amateur and draft side, and love hopping on with you whenever I can, because I mean, I wouldn't be at BA without the inevitable Jeff Ponce. A little bit of BA lore for the listeners, but no, I would not be at BA without Jeff. So this is a blast. I know we're recording this the week before it comes out, so it'll be out next week, but very fun to hop on with you.
Yeah, exactly. You'll be joining me, another organization out here as a professional scout. Very proud of you, Peter. And and is that lore? Like, the first time I was thinking about this today when I was on the treadmill, and it was like the first time that I met you was summer of 2019. You were probably just finished your freshman year in college.
Yep. Yeah.
And super, super young. And you know, you were running the trackman behind the plate at Kituit. And I think it was at least the first game that I had covered and like got into the scouting area. So sitting there, we were kind of chatting. Nick Gonzalez was kind of the big name. It was early part of the Cape season, so not all the big names had showed up yet. And, you know, Gonzalez was a guy that, you know, wasn't a USA national team guy, but had put up like this humongous season as a sophomore at New Mexico. And it was New Mexico, New Mexico State, exactly. But it was a weird run environment. It was like, does he really have this power? Can he really hit? And I can remember he went like backside and hit a homer out like at like 99 miles per hour EV. It was just like an absolute piss rocket out to right field. And we kind of looked at each other and was like, all right. And then I think he had a couple more hits that day, played really well. And I kept coming back to Kituit and connecting with you, ended up working with me at Prospects Live. Went to the Yankees for a little bit, and then of course when I had an opportunity to, I brought you over here to BA. So that's the Peter Flaherty lore right there. But I was thinking about like that game today and like that home run from Nick Gonzalez, and then obviously the hype machine took off from there, because he seemed to hit a couple of doubles, home runs, a couple singles, just did something every single game that entire summer. It was one of the more dominant K performances I remember.
I was gonna say, there were a lot of Nick Gonzalez swings throughout that 2019 season. I looked at either you or my dad or my brother or any other scout and just kind of did a little eyebrow raise. It was a very special summer for good old Nicky G. And as far as dominance goes, from what I can remember with the Cape League, though my memory is not as, or I guess Rolodex is not as deep as yours, or people with more experience than I have, but it's him being Nick Gonzalez, Alec Bohm, and Travis Bezzana, three of the most dominant summers I've ever seen on the Cape. So it was really special.
Yeah. And I would throw in maybe Brock Wilkin after his freshman year. Like that was a super, it was more of like a power hitting display, which you don't always see in the Cape. That was pretty dominant. And I think just because it was like a freshman doing it too, that, had just turned 19, like weeks before, because he's really young. So like weeks before, he showed up on the Cape. So that was another one. But we're not here to talk about the Cape. We're here to talk about some Padres. Peter, you did our Padres top 30 this year for the handbook. First question we always ask is diving into the decision at one. How difficult was it to rank Ethan Salas at one? Not a ton of other high-end options here, but Cruz Schoolcraft is a pretty decent prospect. So was he in the mix at one at all?
Yeah, so I had the Padres last year as well, and it was a bit of an easier decision putting Leo DeVry up at number one over Ethan Salas. Not a knock on Salas. That's just a testament to how good of a player Leo is. And this year it was another – it was probably a healthier debate between Cruz Schoolcraft and Ethan Salas. Ethan Salas in the end ended up taking over the top spot and has pole position in the system right now. But Cruz Schoolcraft is right there. 2025 first round pick. This big 6'8", 230-pound left-hander. He's got a really good three-pitch mix and a foundation with a fastball and a slider. And everything really plays up, especially his fastball plays up, thanks to his elite extension. So it's a really exciting blend of now stuff, upside. People use the phrase a lot, you know, this is fun clay to mold. I think Schoolcraft fits that to a T. 6'8", he's left-handed. He's at least an average strike thrower. He's got the foundation of three pitches, looks the part of a starter. It's pretty easy to dream on a guy like that. So he was right there as well. And then Cash Mayfield also, you know, certainly was considered.
Yeah, so let's dive into a little bit Ethan Salas's 2025. It was all of 10 games. He was coming off a 2024 season, though he was 18 years old in high A, playing, you know, 111 games. And obviously, you know, as a catcher, you know, caught, I think, 67 of those with some wear and tear on the body, especially for a younger guy, but had a really disappointing season in 2024. Hit 206, 288, 311. And, you know, having done the system for a few years, I'm sure yourself, Padres, you know, outside scouts wanted to see something more from him this year. How are we supposed to sort of evaluate this now that he's sort of had a lost year and some of those guys from his draft class, from his international class are kind of catching up to the level that he's at? I don't know if how many of them are going to be at double A, but there are a few that did reach double A last year, like I think Mod A, et cetera. You know, DeVries has obviously gone further than that. The age to level thing isn't what it was 2 years ago when he was a 17-year-old, you know, that got at bats in high A and double A before the end of the season. And, you know, over 48 games performed really well in low A as a 17-year-old. You don't typically see that. Now that we're kind of 3 or 4 years removed from that, how are we supposed to evaluate Salas as a hitter? Because I think the defensive ability is still there. We're not going to question that.
Yeah, the defense is the defense. I still think he has a chance to be a gold glove defender. But like you said, I think there are more questions surrounding the offensive ability. It's tough because 2025 was a wash. He had a stress fracture in his back. It limited him to 10 games, as you said. So, I mean, you kind of have to throw that out the window. It's important to remember he's still 19. He'll be 19 until June 2026. In which you also said once he turns 20 and, you know, even heading into this year, being a 19-20-year-old at high A is more of an age appropriate kind of deal for the level. But it'll be interesting to see how and if the bat is able to progress here between 2025 and 2026, really between 2024 and 2026. I thought it was really positive that, you know, even back in 2024, he showed the ability as a teenager, you know, to make a number of adjustments, and they ended up having a positive impact on his game. He stood taller in the box, raised his handset. You know, he wanted to put more of an emphasis on working down and through the baseball. He's got above average bat to ball skills. But the power right now is more extra base oriented than it is home run oriented, but it's an all fields approach. He can use either gap. You know, I think that he's demonstrated an understanding of the strike zone, and he's slimmed down his chase rate year over year, especially between 23 and 24. But I think just the overall offensive profile might not be as loud as initially anticipated, but you know, I don't want to say he's a very polarizing prospect, but it's sort of like there's more of a conundrum now in evaluating Salas, because like you said, 2025 was a really important season for him. I think that was widely known and understood by anyone that even follows the game, but that's now postponed essentially to 2026 because he didn't play in 2025. So I think it's a big season for Salas. And I think it's important to remember, like, while the offensive performance and production might not be as loud as people may have hoped or anticipated, you know, he's still 19. And I'd kind of wait and see how he does in 26.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's sort of what happens sometimes with these proteges, especially if there's an injury. And, you know, I think you even saw it with like George Lombard this year, where, you know, he raked in high A and got pushed up double A, was one of the youngest players in the Eastern League. And, you know, for a long time, kind of got his teeth kicked in, right? And I think that's what happens to, you know, a similar extent in high A and, you know, the Midwest League, which for points of the season, particularly early in the season and over the final weeks, it gets pretty cold up there. It's not, you know, the best place to hit. The ball doesn't travel as far. Didn't strike out a lot and, you know, did walk quite a bit. So there is some positives. It's just a matter of adding impact, which is something that could come with age. And as you said, still 20 years old. I just think the idea of him being one of like the top 20 prospects in baseball and this sort of elite guy, he really does need to put up an outstanding offensive season for him to kind of climb back into that conversation. You know, the way it was in 2023, where, you know, he was putting up a 123 WRC plus over 48 games as a 16-17 year old and getting into big league games as a 16-year-old, right? It's just, it rarely ever happens. Let's move on to the next question here, Peter. How much better or worse is this system than last year? I think this answer is probably fairly easy, but I'll leave it to you.
So it's worse than last year, but it's, I'm trying to, like, it's not really to the fault of anyone, I would say. It's because, you know, at the trade deadline, you know, much as Padres fans have probably become accustomed to, they were very, very active at the deadline. There were a trio of formerly top 10 prospects that were dealt with Leo DeVries, Braden Nett, and Henry Baez. They're all part of the package that was sent to the Athletics to acquire Mason Miller and JP Sears. And then, you know, this kind of feels like the part of an infomercial where they say, but wait, there's more, because he packaged another trio of prospects in Boston Bateman, Cobb Hightower, and Tyson Nabors. He sent them to the Orioles in the deal that allowed them to acquire Ryan O'Hearn and Ramon Laureano. So Ryan Burgert and Stephen Kolek were also traded to the Royals. So, I mean, if we're sitting here today where, like, you know, if all eight of these guys are still in the system, or even five or six or seven of them are still here, we're probably talking about a much different and a much deeper system. So I'd say that on the developmental arc or developmental roller coaster, whatever you want to call it, the system is more thin than in years past. But it's simply a byproduct of acquiring high impact big league talent that paid positive dividends in 2025.
Yeah. And I think more often than not, that's the case with competitive teams that have bad systems. They're dealing from the system to backfill other areas. I'm sure there's a few of these guys over the last couple of years that Padres fans might look at and say, oh, I kind of wish we still had that guy, considering, you know, we don't have Soto. Like, I wish I had Wood or, you know, Gore or whatever at this point. But with how competitive the team has been over the last handful of years and how aggressive they are in finding opportunities to buy. Because I wouldn't say that they're the most aggressive team in free agency, but, you know, I think when they spot there's maybe a market inefficiency or guys being undervalued a little bit and they can get them on a decent deal or in the trade market, they do it. And the other thing they've done well is they identify talent well. I think that's been the story of AJ Preller's career dating back to his time with the Rangers. He just evaluates, and that group of of amateur guys just evaluates amateur talent as well as anybody in the world. So there's always a couple of guys lurking here, and maybe we'll get into that. Next year's number one. Who's your guess for next year's number one? Is it somebody that's not even in the system?
It's a good question, because you never really know. But if we're going to keep it in-house and keep it in the system, I'm going to say that Cruz Schoolcraft will ascend to the number one spot. And I think that's more a testament to Cruz's abilities than it is a knock on anyone else, as we hit on it at the top. But he's 6'8", he's left-handed, he throws strikes. It's really exciting stuff with a mid to high 90s fastball that plays above its velocity band thanks to Cruz's outstanding extension. His low to mid 80s changeup and his slider both flash above average and look the part of potential swing and miss pitches. He's still just an 18-year-old kid. I think that the upside here with Cruz is really, really exciting. And in his first professional season, fingers crossed that he is able to stay healthy and stay on the mound. It'll be very fun to kind of watch him take off.
Yeah, 100%. Agree with that. And I think that, you know, he's probably the obvious choice as, you know, we dive into this system a little bit and you look at it, kind of leads to the next question. What is this organization good at developing? Which is kind of a loaded question because so many of their prospects do end up getting traded.
Yeah, it's an interesting question to think about. Because like you said, at least in recent years, you know, they've been active on the trade market and a lot of that has involved dealing some of their higher end prospects. And it's also, this was just my second year with the system, so I'm still kind of getting used to it and sort of developing a track record with it. But it seems like at least on the pitching side, you know, they're pretty good at developing stuff and getting the most and out of each individual pitcher's shapes, I guess, so to speak. I think that's becoming a more and more popular phrase now in player development as we careen towards 2026. But at least in the arms that I've seen and the arms that I've dove deep on, it seems like they've done a really good job of developing these guys' stuff, especially, you know, there are a couple arms that we'll get into it at various points throughout the rest of the podcast. But I've been excited with some of the arms that they currently have, arms that they've drafted, and then also some of the developmental leaps that they've made with some of the guys.
Interesting. All right, this is going to wrap up the video portion of the podcast. Is there anything you want to sort of say in closing in that part of it on sort of the top 10, the direction that they're going, or maybe even the type of players you'd like to see him draft this year to reinforce the system a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think the direction in which they're headed, I mean, I think it's exciting. You know, obviously the system is more thin than it was at this point last year, especially at the top. But the top four, that quartet of Ethan Salas, Cruz Schoolcraft, fellow lefty Cash Mayfield, and right-hander Miguel Mendez, I think that's a really strong core at the top to build around however they see fit. And then also behind them, there are some exciting guys and recent draftees who are quality players and pitchers in the teens who have a real chance. So I think it'll be, you know, a little bit of a, not a waiting game, but it'll be interesting to see where it is at this point in 2027, because there's a chance that some of the guys who are lesser known now, particularly the guys that I alluded to in the like 11 to 17 or so range, take a leap and take that next step on their developmental path and potentially shove their way into the top 10 of the system.
Well, there you go. This is going to wrap up the video portion of the podcast for all the YouTube viewers out there. Thanks for tuning in. For the podcast listeners, tripping over myself, stick around. We still probably have another 15, 20 minutes to go, and we'll dive into that.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records in the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off, Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
All right, and we are back on the podcast. The video just ended. We're going to get into a little bit more, a little bit deeper onto this top 30. This is where we get into the really juicy names, some of the sleepers, some of the names to know. But let's talk a little bit more of an overview question here, because I think this is a conversation that comes up a lot with this Padre system. Like, just how shallow is this system comparatively to other systems? And they're going to make you at the end guess how many big leaguers do you think they are in the system at this moment?
Yeah, I like it.
And that's just like anybody who plays in the big leagues. So, can you hear me?
Oh yeah. Did you want me to hop in?
Yeah.
Oh, should I guess how many big leaguers are playing right now?
Huh? No. Yeah, I'm saying like here. We'll try that again.
My bad. That I just misunderstood.
No worries. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to say like of this 30, like how many of these guys do you think are in the big leagues at some point in their careers? It's more or less a roundabout polite way of me asking if there's any 20s. All right. So we'll just jump back in from this point now then. Hold on. All right. And we are back on the other end with the podcast. We're going to dive in a little bit more to the top 30 here on this Padre system. We'll dive into some of the sleepers, some of the good names. We're going to go negative a little bit here, though, Peter. How shallow is this Padres system comparatively to some of the other 30s? You're involved in some of the proofreading for the handbook, et cetera. So you got some feel for some of the other teams. And how many big leaguers would you guess are currently in this top 30 in the future? That's even just one inning, one at bat.
So I think comparatively speaking, and it's unfair, I think, at this point, to compare the Padres system to some of the others, just because of what we mentioned at the top of the show and even in the middle with how active they were at the deadline, trading eight guys who at one point or another were in the 30 at this point last year. So, I mean, it would look a lot different and we'd be having a different conversation and the narrative would also be shifted if that were the case, but it's not. So I'd say it is a little bit more of a thin system. That's not to say that there aren't a lot of exciting players in it, which I think is the case. And as far as how many guys will play in the big leagues, one AB or one pitch thrown, that's a great question. Of the 30, I'll say at the end of the day, at least I'll say 20 plus, and go on the, I guess, somewhat optimistic and encouraging side. I think at least 20 of these guys get up there.
Let's talk through some of those players now. And let's talk through some of your favorite names and players to know. Of course, in this system, it should probably be players to know outside the top four. And you could certainly include some of these guys in the back end of the top 10. Who are some of the players that you really do like in the system? You know, outside of those top guys like Salas and Schoolcraft and Mayfield and Mendez that we did bring up.
Yeah. So I think one guy that's become a sort of a favorite of Padres fans, or at least Padres fans who really go in depth and know their stuff with the system. And, you know, even a lot of us at BA with, I know you and Josh Norris like him as well, and as do I. But right-handed pitcher Tucker Musgrove, who currently ranks at number 12 in the system. It's a pretty interesting story with Tucker. I think it's a scouting success story for the Padres. But he was drafted in 2023. He was a two-way player at NAIA Mobile down in Alabama, signed for just under $200,000, but had Tommy John shortly after he was signed, missed all of 2024, had a pretty limited 20 and a third inning sample in 2025. Then he sort of made some waves and noise out in the Arizona Fall League when Josh got a really good look at him. But he's a really athletic arm, pitches exclusively out of the stretch. It's a really loud and dynamic fastball sweeper combo with Musgrove. For me, his fastball is the best in the system. The velo is the velo with him. Like, it's mid to high 90s. I think he was up to 100 out in Arizona with some carry in the top half of the zone. But it's the stuff that's under the hood that sort of helps push it over the goal line and makes it a strong 60, perhaps even closer to a 70 or 65, however you take your grades. But, you know, it's a high spin pitch. It averaged just under 2,500 RPMs. He's got a really flat vertical approach angle that enhances its riding effect, consistently gets it above the barrel of opposing hitters. I think it had a 39% miss rate in 2025. The sweeper is a little inconsistent in shape, but at its best, it flashes a lot of teeth with, you know, sharp lateral life with some late depth. And then, you know, it's also a consistent whiff generator. So those are two swing and miss pitches. Lacks a real viable third pitch right now. It's a mid to upper 80s downer curveball in the command of scatter shot. So he kind of looks the part of a bullpen arm in the future, potentially. But in his first full healthy year in 26, it'll be very interesting to see the kind of season he puts together, because there are some really exciting qualities here with him.
Yeah. Who are some other guys, you know, outside of this top 10 that are names to know? Maybe even recent draftees, because they do have a few of those guys sort of mixed into this this 11 to 20 range.
Yeah. Excuse me. Right outside or right behind Tucker Musgrove is outfielder Braden Karpathios. Pretty intriguing tools with him as well. He's another, I'd say, scouting success story for San Diego. He was signed as an undrafted free agent out of Harford, no T, junior college down in Maryland. Had a solid year in 2025. The batted ball data with him is really encouraging. Posted a 90th percentile EV of just under 106. He's got an above average arm in right field. Power is teetering on above average. There are some exciting traits there. Right-handed pitcher Michael Cellina is a name that I think draftniks became very familiar with in 2025 after his time at St. Bonaventure. He was on his way to what was looking like a great year for the Bonnies, but it was limited to just four starts due to an arm injury that ended up requiring Tommy John surgery. But a little bit undersized righty, another guy that operates exclusively out of the stretch, but his fastball has been up to 100, 101. Last fall, it was allegedly up to 102, and it proved to be really just overpowering for hitters last spring at the collegiate level. And, you know, generated whiff and chase rates of 34 and 33% respectively. And he pairs it with a two plane slider that flashes above average. And like Musgrove, obviously the traits of each pitch are a little different, but they're both worthy and viable swing and miss pitches. And also like Musgrove, probably to a higher degree, he lacks a real third pitch, and the command is also on the fringier side, but exciting building blocks from a stuff standpoint, from a dynamism standpoint. He's an arm to follow. His pro debut probably won't come until the middle of the spring or early summer 2026 at maybe the earliest. There's no reason to rush a guy like that. But he's a high octane arm that, you know, he's got a chance.
Yeah, I think he's really interesting. I'm going to throw one more draft name at you with Truett McDonough. He did hit, like, it was 12 games, but 279, 360, 512 with a couple homers and four doubles in the MLB draft league. Was a, you know, a high school senior, was a high school pick. Is this potentially like a like an AJ Padres special here where a year from now this guy is a top 10 prospect in the system and somebody we're talking about is, you know, potentially a scouting find by them? There's been a few.
He's definitely someone to keep very close tabs on. I know and how we do our prospect handbook chapters, we talk to a lot of people both inside and outside of the respective systems that we're working on. I know the Padres are really, really high on Truett. Like you said, he had a very encouraging showing in the draft league pre-draft last summer. They're able to sign him away from his UCLA commit. They signed him to a way over slot deal in the 11th round worth like $650,000. Big, strong kid, kind of a classic, like, raw power, arm strength type of deal behind the plate at the catcher position. A lot of it's going to come down to, just like it does with, I guess, every prospect to an extent, but just how much he's going to hit and how much he's going to be able to hit. He posted just a 53% overall contact rate in his pro debut, but it was across a very small sample size. And I think that picking up secondaries and spin out of the pitcher's hand was a particular bugaboo for him. The chase rate was over 30% against every type of non-fastball pitch. But he's got a ton of strength in his swing. It's power to all fields. He's just got to move the baseball and put it in play. And he'll continue to work hard at refining his defensive skill set so he can stick behind the plate. He's obviously a bigger kid at 6'3", 215, but he's got an above average arm. So two above average tools that serve as his foundation, but he's going to need to add polish to his hit tool and continue to work hard on, you know, the catching minutiae so he can stick behind the dish.
Be interesting to follow. And this is a system where I always kind of look through it and be like, who a year from now are people going to be talking about? Know if we had that guy so much last year, but a lot of that is because they've been trading so many of these guys, so we'll see. Peter, want to thank you for joining me. Want to thank all the listeners out there for listening and tuning in and supporting us. Go over to baseballamerica.com. all the top 30s are now up on the site. We have all our fantasy rankings up, draft rankings, college content as we're ramping up for the college season to begin. And of course, Peter, thanks for joining me. Thanks for working with me. It was a pleasure working with you, and pleasure, you know, reading your content, listening to your podcasts with the guys, et cetera, over the years. It's been a blast. This has been it. It's the Prospect Podcast, Padres Top 30.